It is time for Making Sausage. Today we're going to check in with MinnPost reporter Brianna Birschbach. One of her most recent articles was Mark Dayton's Most Lasting Legacy. Our DFL commentator Colleen Nardone joins us in the studios as well. Good morning, Colleen and Brianna.
Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Brianna, thanks for being here. Your article is specific to Dayton's impact on judicial appointments. Give us kind of an overview of what he has done as governor.
Yeah, I think it's something that people, you know, it happens, you know, from the day one of a governor's term or multiple terms, and it goes on until the end, and it's kind of unseen, unthought about by a lot of people. But Dayton has had kind of an extraordinary opportunity with judicial appointments. Essentially, governors vet candidates for, review and vet candidates for almost every judgeship across the state. That means the Court of Appeals, the Minnesota Supreme Court, and all the district courts in all the counties across the state. And during Dayton's time, there has been an extraordinary number of judges retiring because of a demographic wave. So judges cannot serve beyond the mandatory retirement age of 70. So some people have been hitting that. Others have just retired of their own volition because they're ready. So Dayton has had the opportunity so far to appoint about 132 judges to the bench. Now, for context, we have about 320 judges that he can appoint total across the whole state. So he's nearing very quickly, having had appointed about half of the entire judicial branch across the state. Now, that's a huge impact one person can have on a whole other entire branch of government. And while Dayton has been governor, his goal has really been to diversify the judicial branch. For a long time, the judiciary has been mostly white men, and that's because a lot of lawyers and a lot of people who worked in sort of legal professions were also white men. More women and more people of color have been becoming lawyers and working in the legal field over the years, and Dayton said, we need to get them to apply to be judges, too. They need to realize that this is an opportunity, and we need to get them into the final round of interviews so I can see a group of judges who look like the people of the state of Minnesota. So during his time, he has increased the diversity of the bench by quite a bit, about 89% since he started in 2011. And it's something that's been going on, you know, slowly over the years, but Dayton's really had a chance to take a big bite out of that that sort of issue and diversifying the judiciary.
Now, this has been partly, I mean, when we get to this, I guess we can't really discuss judges, I think, without looking at the whole picture. And that's the fact that in Minnesota, we choose our judges based more on merit. Or do you think that's a fair statement than in some states?
Certainly. And I think everyone I talked to for this story said that's continued under Dayton. We have a really specific process in the Constitution. Only judges can pick governors, governors can pick judges, and that in itself could get potentially really political, especially if you have a governor who says, you know, I want all governors who have the same political beliefs as me or something like that. But Minnesota has managed to stay away from that. In the 90s, or late 80s, early 90s, the legislature created a judicial selection commission, which is about nearly 50 volunteers who vet candidates for each judicial opening. So they go through and look for, they post the application, kind of like you would any job application. Mm-hmm. They vet and sift through, I think Dayton's received over 2,000 applications for judgeships during his time in office. So they would sift through those, and then they would ultimately present three candidates to the governor. And I think through that process, it has really taken politics out of it and looked more at the merits of the person's legal background. So that process and having that expertise, you know, the commission are lawyers, former judges, people who understand, you know, what it takes to be a judge, and they're from all over the state of Minnesota. And they really look at their legal experience, not their political experience, and they present the final candidates to the governor. So I think that makes a big difference in this merit selection. And so far, governors have really stayed true to those recommendations and picked someone from those. Both Dayton and former Governor Plenty and former Governor Jesse Ventura before him.
And I believe Governor Arne Carlson as well, at least for part of his term. At least,
yep.
I know some of the judges that he appointed definitely were not people of his his party, which is why I remember so clearly that he was taking the recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think some people are worried about Minnesota becoming what's happening in other states, including Wisconsin. But when you think about the national bench, a lot of times when people think about appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court, they think about the politics and they think about gridlock. And I think it's when you funnel this down to Minnesota, a lot of people stop and think, oh, I bet it's the same here. It's a common, I bet it's just as bad here. But it really is different in Minnesota, and people would like it to stay that way and not let that become something that gets politicized.
Brianna, what do you think this means for the future of Minnesota?
You know, I think, you know, Dayton talked a bit about this, you know, why is it important to diversify the bench across the state? And, you know, part of it is when you go into a courtroom, it's obviously a really significant moment in your life. Usually it's not, it could be something small, but a lot of times it's something big. It's something pivotal happening in your life. And you want to look at the bench and the person who's sort of weighing your, you know, what's happened to you and making a call. You want to see a broader spectrum of people doing that job, people from different life experiences, people with different backgrounds, people who grew up middle income, low income, people who might not have a traditional, you know, a family upbringing, a traditional nuclear family structure. I think it's not just about diversifying gender and race on the bench. It's also about diversifying life experiences, and that makes it that makes sort of the judiciary better overall going ahead. And that also it makes it more people more accustomed to looking up and seeing not just a man sitting on the bench and delivering justice. It becomes more common to see women and people of color also being these sort of deciders and these big, and also doing it in a fair way. I mean, ultimately, what it comes down to is someone's qualifications and their philosophies on justice that get them the job. Dayton said his first question is, why do you want to be a judge, to every candidate? And he said they usually filter into two responses. Either it's all about me, I've always wanted to be a judge, so here I am, or I want to serve. I've done all these other things, and this kind of seemed like the natural next step in a life of public service. And he tends toward the latter answer. He likes that better. And that really doesn't have anything to do with gender or race. It's more about the person's philosophy on law and what guides them in their life.
No, I found that very interesting in your article about how now that this is happening, where there it's not just gender and it's not just one or two specific races. It goes across a broader spectrum. Mm-hmm. And when I take it closer to home, the bench in Itasca County in the local courthouse is filled entirely all by three women. And so I haven't heard anybody say that it's gotten worse. You know, I think they're getting good judicial decisions, so it can mm-hmm. happen.
And women, the number of women judges has increased rapidly as well under Dayton. That's something I think I mentioned but didn't highlight. He increased the number of women. His appointments have been, I believe, 60% women and 40% men, which was a shift. Usually it was predominantly men being appointed. So that was something Dayton was really trying to consider with all of his appointments as well.
I think it's important to note that they are appointed, and we've emphasized this, for competence, not because they're political hacks, because I don't think mm-hmm. any of the women that we have here have ever identified particularly, and certainly not publicly, with a political party. And mm-hmm. when I first remember judges, they always had to be politically active. I'd see people come into one party or the other to get their party creds so that they could get appointed.
Sure. Yeah, that Dayton said one thing that never comes up in the interview is what party they belong to or what candidates they've ever worked for, anything like that. He said it doesn't even cross his mind and it doesn't usually come up. And ultimately, it's not a deciding factor in his process.
I think that it must be inspiring for young women who see this to know that there are so many things they can do, and probably young men of in minority communities that would not have had that as a goal ever to apply for judge because it was for somebody else. And now I found your article very interesting.
Yeah, and if you look at the Minnesota Supreme Court, right now there are a majority of women versus men on that court. There is a black woman, Natalie Hudson. Anne McCaig, the most recent appointment, is the first Native American woman to ever serve. So there's a lot of, when you look, even the state's highest court, the one that's the most high profile, it's more diverse and includes more women than it has in a long time.
We are talking with Brianna Birschbach from MinnPost about an article she did recently about Governor Mark Dayton and his judicial appointments and the legacy of that. You mentioned Justice Anne McCaig. We've had her on Northern Community Radio before. She's from northern Minnesota. Anything else we should know about her?
You know, she's new to the bench. She's the newest member, and I haven't had a chance to see her in action yet, but I will this summer. I think later this summer, the legislature and the governor are in the middle of a pretty intense legal battle after Dayton vetoed funding for the legislature to try to get them back to the negotiating table. A Ramsey County court rejected his veto and has restored funding, but he plans to appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court. And it seems very likely that they're going to take this up because it's a constitutional issue. So it'll be really interesting to see how everybody comes down. Dayton also has a majority of appointments on that court, but I don't think that that's necessarily going to help him in this case. And I think that's kind of the idea. That's a separate branch of government, and that's even though he appointed a lot of those members, they're not necessarily going to rule in favor for him. So it'll be really interesting to see what Ann does kind of in this first really big, high-profile case.
Brianna, before we go, I wonder if you'd give us a little sneak peek at the story that came out yesterday that you wrote, Minnesota's Most Sought-After Troubleshooters. What is this one about?
Yeah, you know, I thought there's a lot of people who I, just looking at appointments to different boards and commissions all the time, their name comes up a lot. Or who in really kind of tough situations, the state knows, oh, let's call on X, Y, or Z because everybody knows that they're trustworthy and that they're fair and that they'll kind of be a steady hand ruling over this process. So I thought that would be a nice reminder to people that even when there's gridlock, even when things feel like they're going wrong, there are people who really have been along and working to try to make things better from both parties, from all sorts of business lawyers, former legislators. So I profiled some of them. I would say the best example of this in the state of Minnesota is a man named Michael Vekich, who actually went to Hibbing High School and grew up in the Iron Range. He is a certified public accountant who has had an appointment in every gubernatorial administration since Purpich. So he ran for the governor's endorsement way back in 2002, didn't get it, but has been appointed by governors, independents, Democratic, Republican, for years since then. He's currently chair of the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, which he took over after the former chair, Michelle Stelmhagen, resigned over use of suites, and the executive director resigned as well. So this is a common thing that happens with Vekich, is when things go wrong, he gets called in to help smooth things over. He's been head of the state lottery twice now, both after scandals, and he's been the one called to come in and fix things. So I think he's someone who everybody knows will get the job done, and it's really interesting to see that no matter political party, the kind of people who everyone can count on to fix things. Another is Kathleen Blatt, former Supreme Court justice, first woman to lead the Supreme Court. She's been called on during the shutdown. She was also called on during this stadium suite controversy as well to try to smooth things over.
You can read Brianna Birschbach's writing on state politics at MinnPost.com. They're a member-supported online journalism organization. You can find out how to support them at their website, MinnPost.com. Brianna, thanks so much for being with us. We'll check in with you later this summer.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You've been listening to Making Sausage. Next week, we continue on with our governor candidate conversations. To catch up on them, go to our website, kexe.org. Colleen, good to have you in again.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next governor interview
That's right. Stay tuned next Thursday morning at 7:20.